and welcome to a slightly delayed Little Adams. My name's Potter Greedy. I'm here with my co-host Neil Denny. Little Adams is a live talk show about ideas. Each show features a guest from the world of science, journalism, politics, academia, human rights, or the arts in conversation. Our guests bring ideas that are challenging, sometimes controversial, always polemical, but always interesting. And I'll hand over to Neil to introduce this evening's guest, Evan Harris MP.
Thanks, Padraig. Dr. Evan Harris MP is the has been the Liberal Democrat MP for Oxford West and Abingdon since 1997, and he actively campaigns for refugee rights and against racism. He is also a civil liberties campaigner, honorary associate of the National Secular Society, honorary president of the Liberal Democrat Campaign for Lesbian and Gay Rights, and vice president of the Gay and Lesbian Humanist Association. He is one of the most outspoken secularists in Parliament and took a fierce stand against the proposed incitement to religious hatred bill. In 2009, Evan was awarded, along with Lord Avebury, the National Secular Society's Secularist of the Year Award for his role in the abolition of the common law offence of blasphemous libel. So, Evan, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much.
Well, let's talk about the campaign against the blasphemy law first. So let's talk about how that began, how you got involved in it, and what happened, basically.
Well, I've always been interested, well, I've got more and more interested in free speech, but ever since university, which was 20-something years ago, when there was a no-platform policy proposed by the left, they thought that it was legitimate to physically stop people that they classified as racists, taking on the role of the police, from speaking on campus, and they were using that against right-wing, but elected conservative politicians, who I didn't agree with, but I even more didn't agree with them being made free speech martyrs by trendy lefties not understanding that the way to deal with these people is to argue against them or ignore them. And when I got elected to Parliament some years later, I was always looking for opportunities, or opportunities arose to protect free speech, and the first thing that came along was the incitement to religious hatred law, actually, which mm-hmm. you mentioned in the introduction, and I led the campaign to prevent that being wide-ranging, so to have a very wide ban on words or behaviour that might incite hatred against individuals mm-hmm. based on their religion. For the main reason was that I wanted to be able to say we should all hate these right-wing Christian homophobes without being criminalised for that. It's not my style, actually, but I don't see why it should be a criminal offence. And they said, oh, but can't you just talk about the homophobia, not the homophobes? No, I hate Nazis, not just Nazism. And so the idea that you can discriminate when it comes to ideas between the people who hold those ideas and the ideas themselves is wrong. You certainly shouldn't be running a criminal tightrope. And anyway, we won that by one vote against the government. That was the second vote that Tony Blair lost, only the second out of two. And it struck me that even at that time, we were still trying to work our way towards getting an opportunity to debate the blasphemy laws, mm-hmm. which, while they weren't really used in this country, were still a catalyst for the sort of people who objected to Jerry Springer the Opera being on BBC Two, people who clearly have got deficient thumbs because they can't use their remote to turn over if they don't like it. And they wanted to bring a private prosecution, and they wasted the police time in prosecuting. And the BBC guidelines still had rules in those days about not overstepping the mark on blasphemy. It's discriminatory. It was one religion only. And a whole load of people who said that they were against an incitement to religious hatred law, which had me coalitioned with some quite religious people who mm-hmm. wanted the right, as they should have, to attack other religions in fiery tones, were not willing to defend the abolition or call for the abolition of blasphemy. So I thought I would try and isolate them. And so an opportunity came along to amend a government bill, the Criminal Justice and Immigration Bill, and I put an amendment down just before Christmas and told the minister's office they had to do something about this because it would come up. And 2 days before, the minister finally realised or finally opened the letter and had a panic. And would I withdraw it because it was all very awkward and they hadn't consulted the church? I said, well, you are elected. But anyway, in the end, they did agree to repeal it themselves in the next stage of the bill. And it was important because it did enable us as a country to be able to complain about Sudan, for mm-hmm. example, imprisoning teachers who call teddy bears Muhammad on a blasphemy law without that country pointing at us and saying, well, you can't talk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the, you talked about the defeat by one vote of the incitement to religious hatred law, and this was often seen at the time as being the various representatives of religion's answer to the blasphemy law, in that they saw that it was illogically only protecting one religion in
That's
the
right.
country, but rather than want to repeal it, they wanted basically the same protection.
That's right. It was outrageous that the government should have sort of catered for this. It was the Muslim Council of Britain, among others, but supported, as many religions do support other religions almost unthinkingly, by many parts of the Church of England and indeed the Roman Catholic hierarchy, who thought, well, we want our own blasphemy law post-Salman Rushdie. And Salman Rushdie should have told us that all blasphemy laws were wrong, that you shouldn't criminalise criticism of ideas. Indeed, if anything, when it comes to religious ideas, given what many of them represent in terms of implications for women, gay people, or indeed the sort of jihadi crusader rhetoric that abounds, you have a responsibility to get stuck in, not be cautioned against doing so for fear of breaking the law. And it was outrageous that the government, shocking that the government should have thought that, well, we can't really extend blasphemy because that might appear to be anti-Christian, so what we'll do is we'll have another law that amounts to the same thing. And the only thing that differed was that it was inciting hatred against people, not their religion. But I mean, it's as I said, it's already very difficult to distinguish the two, and it's ridiculous to do so. Religion, to me, is an idea, just like a political idea, and there shouldn't be a free-for-all on attacking politicians and not people who have religious ideas, which often cross over. So it was wrong that the government did that. We should have won by more than one vote, but I'm very grateful to the MPs, the Labour MPs who rebelled, who were actually, many of them, Catholics, and some secular ones. So it was a curious combination. I've never been in a room on a campaign with Melanie Phillips on one end of the table and Polly Toynbee on the other. So it was surreal in many cases. And we had support from Rowan Atkinson on the one hand and Peter Tatchell and Richard Dawkins. So it was an interesting combination.
But, you know, you've been free. That's the... I suppose that's a very physical manifestation of the fact that, you know, free expression, if it means anything, is for everybody.
Yes, and it also demonstrates that it's a secular society, one that separates state and religion, that protects freedom of religion for all religions as well as those without. So it's those countries that are theocracies that are the most harsh, with laws on apostasy and blasphemy and lack of freedom for women in particular, and obviously gay people, to have free lives and human rights. So actually, separating the church and state and not having laws is actually freeing up people to have religious belief. And none of my campaigns are against people having religious belief. I don't proselytise for atheism, as for example Richard Dawkins does, although I admire him greatly. I'm restricting my campaign and those who support me into making sure that we have no privilege for religion. And faith schools is a typical example. You segregate children and you discriminate against children of the wrong religion or no religion, and we don't allow that with race, so how can we justify it in state schools on the basis of religion?
There's been in the last few weeks there's been an interesting judgment against the Jewish Free School on exactly that, the kind of, which I found very interesting, in that it crosses that line between race and religion. I mean, is there an easy, not an easy, but a straightforward answer to that dilemma?
Well, I mean, I think both racial discrimination and religious discrimination are wrong. This was a good judgment in the appeal.
Maybe we should clarify slightly for listeners who haven't been following this, what happened. Yeah. But essentially, a court decided that a school was wrong in discriminating against, or a faith school was wrong in discriminating against a pupil because his mother had converted to Judaism rather than was born into Judaism, and they had decided that he was not technically Jewish.
That's right. So they were doing defining Judaism on the basis of descent, and if they do that, then in terms of our laws, and the school is governed by our laws, not religious law, when it comes to their margin to discriminate on religious grounds. That's a racial test, and mm-hmm. clearly, to my view, it is a racial test. It doesn't. So that means that they'll just have to base their religious discrimination on whether on what people believe and practice, which is what I thought religion was. I'm trying to go further. I'm trying to identify a case we can bring which says that it's against one's human rights, it clearly is, to suffer detriment. You can't go to your next door school because you're not of the right religion when it's the local state school. And that's clearly a detriment. And the government, in order to enable that to be compliant with human rights, have to objectively justify it. And I don't think they can objectively justify it on any basis, because there's plenty of faith schools who don't discriminate and they're still faith schools. So it's not preserving faith schoolosity. It's not good enough. It's not a good enough basis. It's not a proportionate, what's in legal terms, a proportionate basis. So, and I'm bringing it up during the passage of the Equality Bill, which is a very good bill, but then has exemptions to allow religious discrimination. And you know, remember, religious discrimination is against people of other religions, and there's no basis to do it in public services. If religions want to do it themselves, that's obviously what they do. You know, you can't be a member of our club unless you believe what we believe in, fine, but leave the state out of it. And it's absolutely vital that we make more progress on this, because otherwise we're going to have more faith schools and more segregation. It's not the only cause of segregation, obviously. There's segregated housing already, but it makes it worse when you're bussing in people of the right religion. I mean, there are schools in Bradford, which are Church of England schools, Catholic schools, which are all white, and Church of England schools, which are all brown, mm-hmm. all Asian, because they don't discriminate, and the white kids are being bussed out of their local area to this white only school. It segregates, and it's bad public policy as well as being against individual rights.
You mentioned how, what I think is a recent development, how because religions as a group perceive themselves to be under attack, it seems like suddenly they're banded together and sort of say, we're all in this together, which, considering that, as well as presumably as secularists and atheists, they also, various religions, believe that the adherents of other religions are all going to hell or their version of.
It's a curious coalition.
This is, yeah, it's some sort of an irony. And I wonder if, as someone who's been campaigning in sort of secular issues for a while, is this a recent development? I mean, have you noticed it begin to happen?
First, I want to define terms. Okay, there's religious people and there's people who actively believe in non-religious beliefs, or humanists or atheists. Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to reclaim secularism as something that religious people can be, which is mm-hmm. believing in the separation of sure. religion and the state, regardless of your religion. There are plenty of people in my party, in the Liberal Democrats, who are religious, who mm-hmm. believe in, for example, not having a state religion, just establishing the Church of England to free it. I mean, and the American churches don't do too badly, mm-hmm. Even though there's separation of church and state there. I don't think that religions perceive themselves as being under attack, but they're claiming that they're under attack mm-hmm. in order to create some sympathy, in order to mount a campaign to get themselves rights. So, and they're much more muscular than they were, and they're much better financed than they were, and religions have tended to be, and I don't want to generalise, but there's a wing of the Church of England now that's very active in lobbying the Evangelical Alliance mm-hmm. and the Christian Institute and the organisation CARE, who are active in Parliament. They have, some of them have interns in Parliament, and they lobby. And that never used to be the case. And the liberal wing of the Anglican Church is not active in doing that at all. So you're seeing an over-representation, as it were, as well as I think there is a more evangelical aspect to a large proportion of Church of England followers. And certainly you see this, I think we've seen over the worst of it, but there was a very active lobby by Muslims as well. And the Catholics are also. And they're right. I mean, you know, they are a lobby group. You know, if the Friends of the Earth are allowed to lobby for what they want, then the Catholic Church should be able to argue against contraception and against choice for women considering abortion. And, you know, they have every right to do it. But let's be very clear what they're trying to argue. They're trying to argue, for example, that public service workers, like a registrar like there was in Islington, a marriage registrar, civil partnerships registrar, should have the right to discriminate on the basis of their religious beliefs against gay people in the delivery of a public service that they're paid to deliver by local council taxpayers. That's wrong. There shouldn't be an exemption for public service workers to say, I'm not going to serve you because you're black or gay. And just because it's a religious belief rather than a racist belief or a racial belief that prompts the prejudice does not mean there should be an exemption for it. Yet, you know, that had to be fought to the Employment Appeal Tribunal, and I'm still trying to ensure the government, for example, are proposing that there should be a right of religious organisations delivering public services to discriminate on religious grounds. And I just don't think we want a system where the Jewish residents of a community get a kosher Meals on Wheels which refuses to serve kosher food to anyone who's not Jewish, and then the Muslim residents have a halal Meals on Wheels service that refuses, say, we're not going to take your calls if, you know, even if you're happy to have halal food, if you're and one for everyone else. They should just have Meals on Wheels with a menu choice that doesn't discriminate against users, and they want the right of Catholic adoption agencies, which have just lost the right, thank goodness, to discriminate against prospective gay adoptive parents, to say no Jews need apply in the window. And they're allowed to do that. The government's proposing that that should continue to be allowed. And I accept that more Catholics will apply to a Catholic adoption agency. Fair enough. They can market themselves to Catholics, but to have no Jews, no Protestants is just as bad as having no Gypsies, no Blacks, in my view. There's no justification for it. Sorry, I feel strongly about this. Can you tell?
Let's talk very, very quickly. We've talked about your past victories, but currently you're working on, and to clear an issue, we're all working on the libel laws at the moment.
Yeah.
I think, I've heard you say in the past that, you know, we have to explain to people why the libel laws matter. Yeah. So, very quickly, why do the libel laws matter?
We have a problem in this country that we have the most difficult libel laws to defend oneself against, and that's bad for the free press. And I'm not arguing, I want to make it clear, that the privacy laws that we have are wrong. So that, you know, I'm quite happy with the judgment on Max Mosley in the News of the World, but it's the libel laws that newspapers suffer, academics suffer, and we see wealthy business interests from abroad, including Saudi Arabia, coming to London to sue an American academic for a book which sold 12 copies or something in London, because we can take that jurisdiction in our country for some reason, and the burden of proof is reversed. So you have to, when the defendant has to prove that they're innocent rather than the other way around. So there's major problems. And as you know, this was prompted by a libel case involving the science writer Simon Singh. And it's brought together the creative side of things, and comedians and writers and entertainers like Stephen Fry and others, headed up by, on the comedy side, by Robin Ince, with the scientists and scientific organisations, say the last thing we want is not to be able to, in strong terms if necessary, take issue with claims made by people for healthcare products, for example. So it's a big issue, and I'm hoping we'll be able to make progress, though. The government is resistant, as it always is.
But just to finish off, I know that Ben Bradshaw has, in principle, agreed to meet a delegation of.
Yes, I asked him last week if he'd at least meet, and he said, "Oh, it's not his responsibility." I said, "Well, I think if the creative world is unhappy about this, and you want to encourage creativity in this country, then you should at least hear their concerns, and then you can put them to the Conservative Justice Secretary Jack Straw, and so I hope we'll be able to press on with that.
We're out of time. Evan, thank you very much
for
joining us today.
Thanks.